time for the End of Conversation podcast with funny man Damian Lemon and the voice of your choice, Ali Muhammad.
Yeah, this is Damian Lemon.
This is Ali Muhammad.
And this is In the Conversation,
the podcast.
We back in the building, back in the ear canal, back in your speakers right here, you know, after another week, second week of the second month of Black History Year. How you feeling?
Ah, man, I wasn't ready. I'm feeling great. Black History Year.
Yeah, fuck it. We're taking it.
Second week of the second month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with that.
It is.
Trying to make good. Some black history myself. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that shit. Got any shit cracking? Anything you're excited about? Black history wise?
I mean, just the stuff we've talked about. We've talked about most of my stuff here. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, all of that is cracking off. So, I'm just, you know, looking forward to the future. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not saying that I'm, you know, leaving New York anytime soon, but seemed like my wife want to. So, that might be some type of hybrid might be in the works.
That sounds like step one. Yeah.
You know, once your lady start looking for a house, it's over.
Yeah, because that means we looking for a house.
Exactly. Yeah. I remember when we started looking for the house, our first house, right? Uh-huh. And it was like, yeah, we just come ride around and look. That's when open house porn was all of the rage, you know, 2000, early 2000s, and open houses had lines out the door and shit like that. Mm-hmm. Guess the interest rates was low. I ain't know no better. I didn't know what was going on. It's just a lot of people looked like they was trying to buy houses. I just thought that's how it went. Wow. But she was like, let's just look. Shit. That looking turned into a full-time job, boy. And then it was like, we went ahead and did it. But if it was me, I wouldn't have did it on my own like that. You know what I'm saying? It's like at that time I needed a little push in that direction. I was like, well, why don't we just get a little condo or something? You know what I'm saying? It's just us. But that, you know what I'm saying, that move, you know what I mean, probably was one of the best moves I made, that, you know, under her lead of this is what we need to do.
Right. So, shout out to women with vision.
Shout out to women with vision and, you know, a lifestyle to uphold.
Right. So, like, how long was that process from the beginning, from just looking, browsing, to closing? How long did that shit take?
Shit, you know, at that time, there was a lot of bidding wars in New York. So, it took about almost a year, like maybe 9 months. So, from the time we started looking, we actually went into contract maybe, you know, We got outbidded on like three houses, and then we went into contract on the one that we got. But from the time we signed the contract to the time we closed, it was, you know what I'm saying, it was probably like 6 months. Mm-hmm. And it was like always something, always the next thing and the next thing. And because we was doing a first time homeowners type of situation, it's a lot more requirements that need to be, you know, in place. And then what happened was the lady who was selling us the house, she realized the market was going up really fast. You know what I'm saying? So she felt like she cheated herself. So she wanted to fucking get out the deal.
But, right.
You know what I'm saying? It was already locked and rolling.
Mm. So. Yeah. She sold too early. She was like, damn.
You know what I'm saying? For too cheap, you know what I'm saying? And it was like, because when I seen it, I was like, ooh, that's the right price. You know what I'm saying? And then, so I think after she signed the contract, she's like, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was moving fast.
Got me. I should have just held out. I felt that on a sneaker transaction, not on a house level. So I could just only imagine. I've had that on sneakers and stock where I might have sold a little too early. Then I kept going back and looking at the market. It was like, you know, that's that's rule number one. Don't look at the market after you done closed. You know, you might have your feelings hurt.
Yeah.
That's what's up, man. What was I going to say? It's funny that you said open house porn. I was watching Saturday Night Live this past weekend, and they had this sketch. It was like, you know, I'm in my late 30s, so, you know, in your late 30s, we don't really have sex anymore. You know what I mean? We just kind of, we lay up and we do something different. We crack open Zillow. And it's like this real, like, it's like this real, like, you know, sensual type of ad. We get on Zillow. And it's like, oh no, this has a backyard. Look at this big backyard. You know, shit like that. And they basically, and getting off.
Say I be playing the Zillow.
Yeah, man. Now that's Zillow. That's the porn hub for domestication. But and I laughed. I thought it was hilarious when I watched it. But then it turns out it was a little bit of controversy because a comedian, Ted Alexandro, has a very, very, very similar joke. So yeah, so that kind of became a little kerfuffle on the comedy timeline, Twitter timeline. You know, you know, you kind of maybe chalk it up to parallel thinking. That's what they say sometimes, quote unquote. But who knows? But you know, I don't even want to jump all the way in that. It's always nasty when that happens. You know, we try to give the benefit of the doubt, especially when you know people on both sides of it. You know what I mean? I think there's great minds on both sides, so you try not to get too deep into the fray. But that just reminded me when you said open house porn, that sketch that I saw this week. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, that Zillow is a you know what I'm saying, is a grown folk pastime for real. Like, okay, because you be judging what you got versus what you could get. You know what I'm saying? Well, shit, if I sold this motherfucker, I guess it's not Pornhub. It's more like it's Pornhub. It starts off as like Pornhub, but then it ends up like what's one of them dating apps? You know what I'm saying? Like Tinder.
Right,
for
right.
Domestication. You'd be like, shit, I'm going to swipe right on this house.
So I'm going to go ahead. Yeah, they was like, yeah, contact the agent. And then they contacted the agent. And the agent was like, hey, this is Fran. Like, real frantic agent shit. And it kind of took them out of it. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, it kind of, you know. Another thing about Zillow is it's so much information that, you know, another Zillow joke. This is from way back, though. My man Hannibal. Hannibal Buress used to have a joke talking about, you know, how he used to just go on Zillow and look up the cost of people's houses, you know, because he was trying to buy a house at one point. And, you know, he said he'd go to people's houses and he'd say, yeah, you got a nice house, man. How much you pay for it? He said, when people be real gun shy, reluctant to say it, he said, I bet. Just give me a second. I'm about to go on Zillow and get this information, and then I'll be leading this conversation.
Yeah, that's fucked up.
Man. But it definitely has it out there in the world.
I mean, it's out there for real. I mean, all that stuff is out there. When we started looking, it's like a tool had just came on the scene that helped you do that. It was Property Shark. And they still around, but they went with a different model. It's like they kind of like they missed the whole Zillow wave. Because they went with like a, you know, subscription, pay $100 to, you know what I'm saying, to be like a professional, $100 a month or some shit, to be a professional user and all that kind of shit. But they had, they even have like detailed shit about your shit, you know what I'm saying? Names of who owned that shit, who was the previous owner. Like Zillow just give you numbers. Like Property Shark, it go deep.
It give you backstory.
Yeah,
they was beefing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, but they was the only ones. It was like, that was like new. You're talking 2000, what was this? 2003. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, that was just like a tool because it wasn't a whole lot of online information. And back then, like the online ads for homes and shit was kind of, fuzzy looking. You know, it wasn't no high resolution pictures and shit like that. It was the beginning.
Right.
So you had Property Shark and Corcoran was the leaders in that digital shit, making it look pretty. They was making it look pretty, but expensive.
Yeah, they're getting paid for that info.
Leaders of gentrification.
Old Barbara Corcoran. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Speaking of that, well, stepping further than just buying homes and things, more in line with the the nature of transparency, right? You know, there's a lot of talk, you know, just jumping from, oh, I know how much this cat paid for his house, I know how much his house is worth, that and the other thing. There's been conversation for at least a couple years about, you know, salary transparency. You know, there's always been this kind of cryptic mind your business, you know, play your cards close to your chest about what you make. Don't really tell nobody. But then there's also the other side of the argument that says that, you know, salary transparency will probably help the market. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people that are getting got. You know, and they don't realize that they could have probably got way more, especially if they had known exactly how much their peers were getting. But there's so much tied to, you know, pay, you know, because pay is also seen as worth. You know what I mean? Like, it's a valuation. It's not just a payment standard. It's more like it's kind of internalized. And it's like, you know, you tell somebody, yo, you know, I got X amount of money for the gig. They're like, oh, that's all you got? You know what I mean? Like, I, you know, it was a meme going around with Ashanti and Keisha Cole at the Versus. And, you know, Keisha Cole was like, I ain't getting no check from Ciroc. And Ashanti was like, you ain't get a check from Ciroc? I did, you know. And it's the moment you hate to, you know, you never would have had that moment because it's such a vulnerable moment. Like, damn, my business was off, or I could have got more. Right. But, you know, what do you think about that? Where do you stand on salary transparency?
Well, I mean, in the closed group of what it is that you're doing, say if it's a movie and, I forget the legal term that you, most favorite nations and shit like that where,
right,
you know, you're saying, you know, if anybody's getting paid above this, I need to get paid above this as well, that type of shit. So in those environments like that, I don't know where else, because, you know what I'm saying, I haven't really thought about that, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, my philosophy is always you are what you negotiate. And if you negotiate your terms, and then you need to be okay with your terms, you know what I mean? It's just, it could be more information on educating yourself on what certain things pay and how you can get your value there. And that's a type of thing that you need to be doing anyway. I think, what is it? The site Indeed, they do some stuff where they poll different people about certain jobs, and then they get an average of what this job pays. But, you know what I'm saying, just as far as everybody open to see what you make, I ain't really with that. You know what I'm saying? Because then it's like, you know, just like somebody looking up your house, like, oh, shit, this nigga made motherfucking shit. You know what I'm saying? And then it's, you're being approached that way, or you're being, you know what I'm saying, taxed that way, and it might not be the case. You know what I mean? You might have made certain things, and you had certain expenses that went up with what you made. So, I think as far as industry wide, you know, and certain like say a film, or you know, projects, or you know what I mean, and you freelancing in a certain department, there should be, you know, certain rates that, a range of rates where you fall. But as far as a personal transparency, nah, I ain't with that. Happen in this house, stay in this house. Everybody business ain't nobody business.
Right. Well, do you discuss pay with anybody? Like when you're trying, when you're negotiating, do you have anybody that, you know, you trust outside of your house that's in your industry that you say, yo, you know, they hit me with such and such, or this was the offer. What do you think? Mm-hmm. Or do you just kind of go off your own gut?
Well, sometimes, you know, you go off what you know the value of what you're doing. I know sometimes it's like, say, I might get a project to shoot some shit, right? I know for a fact that it's people that charge a whole lot more than what I'm being offered, you know what I'm saying, to do certain things. But then at a certain point in the game, shit, even still, I ain't never made this amount, so let me go ahead and get it, and then, you know what I'm saying, I could act accordingly from there, you know. So once I've done projects with other companies, and I'm seeing what they're charging for the same type of shit that I'm actually doing on my own, but I'm doing it for them this time. It's like, wow, shit, y'all asking $300,000 for this? That is crazy. But it's eye-opening. But then at the same time, those setups be a lot different too. So it's like, you know, they paying workers' comp, unemployment insurance, a lot of different things that I don't really get into on certain jobs because, you know, I'm not holding employees like that. I'm bringing in the team as we go. So, you know what I mean? It's just a different setup. So I don't really trip off. They made $300,000 off of this and I might have charged $125,000 because, you know, that's just what it is. I'd rather have less of the headache and bring in more of the profit. So it's just, you know, it's you know, as you grow, you set your business up the way you need to set it up. My business for a long time had been set up, one, to save my fucking life, you know what I'm saying? And two, it was, you know what I'm saying, okay, once I got it going, then you say, all right, I'm out of survival mode, let me get into a structured way I'm doing things and I'm going to hold my clients to a higher standard, and then I'm going to hold my work to a higher standard. Then there's the next level. Let me corporatize what I'm doing and really get it all done and have employees and unemployment insurance and workers comp and all that. So you have to decide where you at. You can't do it on the, you can't do it from one level, but then want this level price. You could try it, but then, you know, you gotta work it out from there. You know, you could try anything out here. That's the thing with the world. You can ask for whatever the fuck you want. If you find somebody to go for it, then that's what it is.
You know what I'm saying? That's your rate.
That's your rate. So as you are what you negotiate.
Right.
So.
Right.
A lot of times we hold ourselves back. And we undervalue ourselves a lot of times. So you go in thinking about what you need. I need you know what I'm saying? I need about 50 grand. You good? I'm good. Okay, cool. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But if you were more patient and more deliberate in your negotiation, you probably could have got 150.
That sting when you find out. When you find out that information later, you be sick like that old homeowner you dealt with.
Right. I try not to be sick about nothing that I agree to. You know what I'm saying? It's like, if I agree to it, I'm going to go ahead and do it. You know?
Right.
But then you know next time not to do that shit. Because no matter if it's a free job or a $300,000 job, the motherfucker's still going to want the same results. You know what I'm saying? So if you accept it at the lowest scale, just expect that motherfucker to approach that shit like they paid millions of dollars. Right. You're like, motherfucker, shit, this nigga, I shouldn't have even took this. But you shouldn't have, but you did. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get to the other side of it, and then, you know, you learn not to do shit like that no more.
Yeah. You learn, you definitely learn, and you gotta, and hopefully you hold it close, Because mm-hmm. that sting could be that sting. Like, you sometimes you gotta take the L as a lesson, but hold that lesson close, because, you know, I think a lot of times with many people, even with myself, and I had to really check myself, you could take a lot of that personal. You mm-hmm. know, you could kind of, like you said, sometimes you could be looking at it for what you need as opposed to what you should ask for, mm-hmm. or sometimes not even being able to fathom what is available to you, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's been a couple times in my career where, you know, I agreed to less than I probably could have gotten. And, you know, it's one to grow on. You're like, you know what I mean? But you grow on it. It's like a shoe that's too tight. You didn't bought it. You walked out the store. Well, you got to keep walking. You got to keep stepping. You got to get your Patrick Mahomes on. Your foot going to be, it's going to be in trouble. But anyway.
In trouble.
We're going to talk about that a little bit. But, you know, I will say this. Coming from, like, the corporate/entertainment industry, music industry, publishing industry, you know what I mean? Where it's a lot of, like, industry ass people, you know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Where it's a lot of, like, front end and persona, and you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? It's a lot less. Well, at least back then, it was a lot less transparency. It was a lot of, I gotta play the role. I can't let you know what I'm really working with. I gotta sell you a dream. It's a facade. You never know what's going on. It's very cloudy. You know what I mean? To when I moved into the comedy realm and even like film and TV, things became a lot more transparent and a lot less personal, you know? Right. Like, initially, I remember when I first started doing comedy, I never knew when to charge, when to mm-hmm. start charging, you know what I mean? And I remember, I'll never forget, my grandmother said to me one day, she said, and I don't think she was being shady, you know, it was just hilarious and it was so real though. But she was like, she said, I forget exactly how it went down, but she was like, "So you still volunteering?" and it was some super truth to it. It wasn't even a little bit of truth. It was 100% truth. I was so eager to, you know, quote unquote, make my name or make my bones in the game, or make a name for yourself, pay your dues type shit. That you know, I was like, nah, I want to get good before I really start asking, you know what I'm saying, start even bringing that conversation up. You know, when you first start, it's very much, oftentimes when you first start doing comedy, you pay to do comedy. You know what I mean? Like, you'll go to open mics, you got to buy a drink, or you got to pay up to $5, maybe 10, I don't know what it is now, maybe even $10 or something like that, just to get 4 to 5 minutes on stage, you know? So, or you have to do, you don't have to, but, or you'll do bringer shows where you need to bring 10 people to get a spot on the show, which is, you know, you brought 10 people out there, paid $15. You just made them $150 that right. You're not going to see no parts of it. And you're getting just a little bit of stage time that is, you know, couched in the context of the bringers. You know what I mean? These are not pro comics. These are the comics that, you know what I mean? And then what would happen is you playing in front of a stacked audience oftentimes. So sometimes people bring their crowd and their crowd fall back until their person is up, so the crowd is not really a crowd, it's just a bunch of little factions, you know. And that could be super frustrating because you love it and you working hard at it like any other job that you, especially probably harder than your regular job because there's a passion there. You know, there's the desire to be great, the desire to advance. You really putting your best foot forward. You know what I'm saying? If you, mm-hmm. if you trying to create a career. So there's often, and you know, if you're all in, you know, you might not really be making no money. You might have a little side job, but that side job ain't really nothing. And you trying to, you know, you trying to see, oh, is there going to be any traction coming on? Blah, blah, blah. Whatever, whatever. So you go through a lot of that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I think my first thing I saw early, I wasn't really with the, I would do the open mics a little bit. You know, if I could budget in, there were free open mics. And, you know, if you were funny, then, you know what I mean? You might get a, you might not have to pay no more. You know what I mean? You do certain rooms and it's not an open mic, but it's like the New Jack section. You know what I'm saying? You don't got to pay, but again, you're being presented in the way of these are new comics, da, 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 da. So the crowd is already kind of looking at you with the, you know what I mean? Like the smirk, you know, got your face all twisted up like, yo, who these cat? You know what I mean? Like they try to justify your worth. But anyway, initially or soon I peeped the hustle, you know, because I did have to remind myself, yo, dog, you used to work in marketing. You used to work in advertising. You used to work in sales. You know mm-hmm. how to sell things. You know how to brand things. You know how to make some money. You know how to go mm-hmm. get some money. And you see the jig over here. You know, so I was like, well, damn, if this person asking me to bring 10 people to get 5 minutes on their show, if I approach a club that I could bring 10 people, because a lot of these clubs, especially like, you know, that's how Comedy on the Hump started. Mm-hmm. On a Wednesday, if you got, I think it might have been as little as 8 people, you could have a show. So 10 people, you definitely could have a show and you could have even more. And if those people paid, that's all coming to you and that's your show. So now you get as much time as you could program for yourself. Plus, mm-hmm. you could give opportunities to other comedians and now you're a producer. Right. Now you somebody that's putting people in position. You know what I'm right. saying? You know, you start to see, oh, okay, you could get your worth. But still, even in that, that could be your own ecosystem. And that happens a lot where comedians are just basically what they call trading spots. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? I'll do a spot on your show, you do a spot on my show. So it might not even be much money or you just the money's going back and forth, but it's not yielding nothing. It's not scaling, mm-hmm. you know, and it's still basically a developing comedian scene, which is great, which is good energy. These are your peers and it's all of that. But sometimes you like, this ain't feeding me. You know what I mean? So then, you're still pondering at what point, because, you know, you're doing the New Jack section and you rocking and then you start to become a popular New Jack, but you still within the New Jack section. Nobody talked to you about no real money yet. Mm-hmm. And then I remember interviewing Tracy Morgan. Shout out to Tracy Morgan. I interviewed Tracy Morgan towards the beginning of my career. So I'm interviewing him, but I'm grilling him. I'm trying to find out, like, you know, this is more than just what's going on, what you got coming, tell me about the movie. Nah, I need to know, yo, let me ask you this. You know what I mean? It's just like as profound as my grandmother's word was, I said, yo, when do you start making money? Like, when you start asking for money? He was like, you know, in Tracy Morgan fashion, he was like, nigga, what that nigga said to me, and I can't remember because I used to listen to this interview all the time. He was like, niggas, you a fucking slave? Some shit like that. I said, nah. He said, nigga, if you working, you get money. Nigga, get paid. Nigga. He was like, matter of fact, I dare you to go get paid. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's how he hit me with that shit. I was like, nigga, say no more. You know what I'm saying? So then my shit used to be, yo, what's your budget? And I remember the first time saying that shit, I had to really, you know, it's a difference when you say it from your chest and when you just say it from the back of your throat. It ain't as much confidence. You know what I mean? On the first few throws, it's not coming through 90 miles an hour. This shit barely over the plate. What's the budget? You know, and then sometimes motherfuckers can hear the reluctance in your voice. They challenge it. Budget? Come on, fat budget. So then you gotta start saying, I'm good. You know, mm-hmm. Now they gotta have a little standoff situation. Walk so away. Then after, yeah, the walk away. Say, all right, well, fuck it. Then let me step off. Let me continue to invest in what I got, what I could control. So then after a while, things start to turn or whatever. But beyond that, that's the early stuff. But beyond that, just to say this, like comedy is so gig-based that, you know, it's really the gig. It's nothing personal. It's not like, I'm Damien from the fucking Tampa Improv. You know what I'm saying? I'm Damien. I'm doing a weekend at the Tampa Improv. I'm probably going to hit up a couple of friends of mine. Yo, have you ever played the Improv? You know what I'm saying? Or I got mm-hmm. an offer from the Improv. What did they hit you for when you did your weekend? What you get? Oh, I got such and such. Oh, really? You know, and then mm-hmm. that you know, obviously you got to take a few things in perspective. Like, you know, are you a draw? Yeah, a few things in consideration. Are you a draw? Because if you ain't a draw, then you probably can't. You have credits? Are you on TV? You know what I mean? There's certain things that you got to take into consideration. But if this is somebody that's your peer and y'all matched on the same thing, then that intel is great to have. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Say, hey, man, send that back. See if we can get this. You know what I mean? It's a little bit more of an informed situation. I learned that early. I learned a friend of mine. Was like, you know, first of all, let them make the offer. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Like when they say, yo, what you want, what you need, you know, if you can allow them to make the offer first. But if they say, nah, well, tell me what you want. Always start high. Don't never give a range. My man told me that. He was like, you give a range, they gonna give you the bottom half of the range every time. You know what I'm saying? You know, 5 to 10, they be like, all right, we're going to give you 5 for the week. You're like, ah, shit, you know? So mm-hmm. just remind yourself and stay consistent to that. And, you know, have a rate, have an actual rate that you know, that you go for. Like you say, hey, this is what it is, and be willing to walk away, you know? Right. But then, you know, lastly, like just when it comes to like the film and stuff, if you get into a union or a guild, then that's also cool because then there's a scale. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Then it's like, it's damn near illegal for them to hit you with this if it's a sanctioned production. If it's a union job, then you're going to get the union, you know, fee or whatever, whatever. But, you know, I like the transparency of it. Obviously, it can definitely be an uncomfortable situation, but I think, you know, for the most part, I think I am pro-transparency. But I'm not going to lie. When somebody just asks you direct, yo, how much you made from that? Right. It'll make me shudder. I think you got to couch that question a little bit. You got to ease that question. There's got to be some context. Hey, listen, I got an offer from such and such. Have you ever da-da-da-da-da? You know what I mean? Right. Rather than just the interrogation. You know that? Mm-hmm. I don't really like all that.
I'm still about the shroud.
Yeah.
Keep the curtains closed, nigga. It was VIPs right. only. You know what I'm saying? Members only over here.
Yeah. You figure it out. You figure it out.
You good.
I'll see you on the other side.
Like I said, if it's like a movie, if it's like projects where, you know, and it's this particular one thing, that's cool. But like if somebody say, you know what I'm saying, put your goddamn salary on the internet, every dime you make, you gotta be transparent about it. That's
oh yeah, no, that's a little much. That'd have to be standardized. I can't be the first one out there with that. Yeah,
I don't think nobody gonna be with that shit.
Yeah, they trying to. There was a thing online. You know, every so often it pops off. Like there was some people tweeting about it online. Like yo, particularly I think it was amongst writers and. I'm not sure which writer kicked it off, but I remember a writer's like, yo, tweet how much you make as a writer. Or tweet how much you make per whatever, whatever. Or tweet how much you... And, like, people was actually putting that shit out there. And it was, you know, it was an effort, I guess, to kind of, equal pay, parity. You know what I'm saying? Like, so people kind of know, yo, you know what I mean? Particularly, like, women, you know, or minority. You know what I mean? People know, oh, this is what's going on out there. This is, oh, wow. For the same job I've been doing, I've been getting 40% of that quote. Damn, that's good to know. All right, well, I'm going to ask for more, you know. And whether you get it or not is a whole nother thing. But sometimes, it's good to kind of know the deal, to be informed with your pitch. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, man.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, man, because, man, it's so many deals. It's so much, you know what I'm saying? The thing about that shit is people get paid all kind of ways for all kind of reasons, you know what I mean? And the thing about getting paid what you want and what you're worth is about positioning yourself and getting your thing in the right place for what you want. You know what I'm saying? So there's people out here that have less talent, but they got better positioning. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's people that have a bigger audience, so they get paid more. It's people that, you know what I mean, that know how to sell, that know how to put right. the team together that makes it go, and they get paid more. You know what I'm saying? It's in Hollywood, it's actors that put asses in the seats. It's people that people come see. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's talented people that people don't come see. I've once took an artist on a little tour, and he was a popular artist. People love him. You know what I'm saying? It's mm-hmm. like, they love him. He had a movie out. You know what I'm saying? It was going alongside this movie. But people didn't want to be in the club with him. That's what I found out in hindsight right. after I done invested this money, that people love him, but they don't want to be in the club with him. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's like, argh. You know what I mean? He's like, nobody wants to party with him. So it's so when you see rappers that position themselves as like the club type of music and the you know what I'm saying, they got that whole feng shui. Mm-hmm. People want to party with them. People want to be out there. People want to see a nigga throw some money in the air or pop all the bottles. And you know what I'm saying? They want to see that shit. Yeah. So that's the environment for that shit. That's why Ciroc was so perfect for somebody like Puff, because he was in the club. He was a party person. You know what I'm saying? His table had drinks. And so for him to add his own drink to it was very endemic to his brand. You know what I'm saying? You can't take, you know what I'm saying, somebody whose brand is not even, has nothing to do with partying, just old intellectual, and put them in the club and think it's going to always work. That shit did not work.
You ain't even want to be in the club with that person.
I wish it was some parody. I wish it was some transparency there. Like, yeah, if you're putting them in the club, then you shouldn't pay this nigga more than $2,000.
Right. And I'm sure there's somebody with that information. You just had to know who to ask.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I tell you that, you know, there's people that talk about a win, but there's a lot of people that talk about a loss, too, to whoever's listening. You know what I mean? I tell you one thing. Don't you fuck with this motherfucker over here.
Not like that.
Yeah, man. So. I will say, I mean, I always stick to, you know, you're only entitled to what you can negotiate. At the end of the day, you know, but, you know, more information could get that could help your cause.
Right. And then, and also, you know, sometimes you don't know, but you know that you got some hot shit. And if you feel like your shit is bubbling, then you're going to ask for what you ask for. And sometimes people ask for stuff and you be like, man, you knew, you know, but it works because they don't have the whole thing of, well, I shouldn't be getting paid this because people have worked for free a bunch of years. Nah, they like, shit, my shit hot. Pay me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm
saying? Heat check.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you got hot shit, then that you should approach it in a way of you put your own value to your thing. You know what I mean? It's just like, you know, rappers, like when Master P came, said, I only got a distribution deal. You know what I'm saying? I do my own marketing. I'm only giving them 15%. Yeah, but he could do that. Master P had already owned a record store. He actually knew how to sell shit. You know what I'm saying? He actually knew his consumer. And he's actually moving units. But then there's people who come in ain't never made nothing. They just in the house making music and saying, I ain't going to be no slave. I just won't, you know what I'm saying? And you ain't got no audience to even make that claim. But then you got somebody that's just hot. He got one hot ass record. That shit hot as fish grease. And it is cracking. This happened every year. That it be that one rapper with that hot record in that one city. And it's going. And right now, it's just like it could be on the internet. And it's going. Then you should ask for whatever the fuck you should ask for, man. Whatever you can come up with. You know what I'm saying? Because people going to want a piece of it if it's already working. Because it's hard to make something work. So if you got something that's already working, they'd rather put the money into that than to try to make something up.
Yeah. You know what? I was thinking about this too. You know, we had our conversation about the outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we talked about how the Super Bowl was going to be the beta test for it, right? Mm-hmm. To your point about heat, mm-hmm. I think a metric of heat right now is how many people show up unmasked to see you perform in the club. Because that's even, that's an extreme fan. That is not a casual fan. That is somebody that is risking, you know, death on a certain level to come hear that record. So right. If you got some B-roll or some footage of that, I think there's a premium right. there. I think that's unmasked content. That's like right. the explicit version.
Right. Yeah, what you saying? But, you know, being in Atlanta, I see niggas risk it all for, you know what I'm saying? They ain't got to be extreme fans. They just want right. to be outside. They do not want, they want to just be outside. They want to get to it. You know what I'm saying? It's some people that's doing it because this is their livelihood. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Outside is their livelihood. And there's a lot of people in Atlanta who, shit, outside is how they make their bread. You know what right. I'm saying? And so they just out there. Some people, you know what I'm saying, just want to be on the scene. They don't want to be cooped up. But, you know, that's the thing about this COVID shit, man. And it's like we about, what, a year in almost? It's a year since the first motherfucker died. Not motherfucker, but first person.
Damn. Wow. I don't do them like that.
No, I was just, no, I wasn't, it wasn't personal. No, I was just talking as, you know what I'm saying, as a conversationalist. Just,
gotcha.
You talking with your homie. I know this shit hit the internet. Uh-huh. And then people like, that motherfucker called the victims of COVID a motherfucker.
So insensitive. Yeah.
You know
yeah.
what I'm saying? So I don't want to seem insensitive or tone deaf.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
But no, it's been a year since the first death.
Yep. Yes, first death, you know, 1 year. And it don't look like this shit is going to be over no time, motherfucker, soon. You know what I'm saying? Because the numbers is high as they ever been. And, and you know, you got the vaccine out there, but that shit don't look like that's moving fast on protecting nothing. So it's like now we get, you know, you like for myself, it's you got to make hard decisions on what you're going to do with yourself. You know what I'm saying? And how you going to move. Like, you know, for me, a lot of my business was outside, you know, mm-hmm. like you shooting content with people in close quarters. You know what I'm saying? You shooting events for brands, you know, shooting. It's not a, you know what I mean? It's not a lot of corporate shooting going on. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you think, yeah, maybe a year to be back, but maybe not. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So now you got to make hard decisions on. What you going to do? Are you going to sit back, wait it out? Or are you going to just do some other new shit that's right now, right here, what you can do within this COVID shit and make yourself some bread? And shit, sometimes you got to let it go. And I'm of the thing of what I did before, that's old shit. You know what I'm saying? I ain't even on that no more. That's a whole long way away from here because it's a long way from it being back to the state that it was. So I can't even worry about that. I got to, shit, I'm on some new shit now to make my shit go from the COVID.
Yeah, man, it's definitely, it's reached, and depending on who you ask, it's surpassed the threshold for a lot of people, you know, to sit idle or to be idle. You know, at this point, you know, COVID is just context for certain people. You know, right. Like, it's kind of like, it's like, yeah, I know, I hear all of that, but I got to figure out what I'm going to do within all of this. It's just right. Like, you know, it's like living in a bad neighborhood. You know what I'm saying? You just got to mm-hmm. be diligent. You obviously don't want nothing bad to happen to you, but you got to live, you know, right. And then on the other side of it, like, you know, not even just, you know, business wise, you know, just mentally too, just being, you know, it's a difference between being still and being, I don't want to say stagnant, but cooped up or being, it's not willful, you know, you have to find the balance, and you have to kind of challenge things, because there's going to be some blowback on both sides of it. Whether you get COVID or you don't get COVID, there's going to be some, it's going to be some blowback on both sides. It's going to be a weird way in how you reacclimate. It's going to be, you know, this being disconnected from a while or for a while, you know, like isolation, you know, all of that type of thing. You know, you know, hopefully you could live beyond it. And obviously the goal is to be as safe as you can. You know, that should still be a concern. And the thing about this being a pandemic is, you know, the thing to keep in mind, even as much as you got to do what you got to do, you still want to protect yourself and protect others. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to be reckless, but it's really striking that balance, because things are not moving as fast as they could be. And it seems like, I don't want to say, well, it don't really feel like the government is urgently concerned. You know what I mean? Like, they get a little something, you know, but it's not like they all the way in tune with the urgency or the necessity of basically how dire the situation is. And it's real. It's real. It's like, you know, it's definitely it's something to challenge. You know what I'm saying? Like, to challenge. I've had people since kind of like the beginning of the pandemic that, you know, their attitude was like, look, I'm just looking at it like, if I get it, I just hope I'm healthy enough to beat it. You know what I mean? Like, I got to move like that. I can't really move in fear. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't really, like, I there's respect there, and I understand the stakes, but at the same time, I gotta do what I gotta do. And if I get it, this is my plan for if I get it. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes just having a plan can give you a little bit of a little bit more confidence, even if it's not the best plan. Sometimes just having a plan feel better than not having a plan. It's like having a knife in your pocket. You know what I'm saying? You might not be able to get to it in time, but you feel like, all right, I know I got something on me. You know what I'm saying? I know I got something for them. You know, and it might not go your way, but at least you got a little bit of wind at your back, or you got a little bit more intent in how you move. And hell yeah, personally speaking, It's super tough, and I've been, as of late, challenging it more and more. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, having to say, "Yo, nah, man, I kind of, you know, this situation is, I gotta venture out." You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna be diligent about it. I'm a double mask up or whatever. But, you know, duty calls. You know what I'm saying? And, like, you know, not for everything, but for certain things, for things that, you know what? Nah, this is this is important. And to be totally honest, without getting super transparent, there's points where I should have moved faster. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and not within the confines of, you know, industry or nothing, but just in the confines of, like, you know, just personal shit. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, you gotta just say, man, you know, fuck it. And not fuck it, you know, not that in that way again, but just more like, that's the context. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, all right, I get it, I see it, but to your point, some hard decisions need to be made, and let's still be diligent, but let's not just succumb to, I don't even want to say hysteria because I think that's reducing it, but like, again, look, who am I waiting for? At some point, you know, like I'm for a while, I felt like somebody that was waiting for somebody, like the government, to blow the whistle. Like, yo, we back, you know, but that's not, it's not going to be that clear. It's going to be evolving. It's not, you know, obviously we see people are not, some people are jumping on the vaccine. Some people are like, still, I'm a chill, mm-hmm. you know, and then, you know, I go through Instagram and all these other, you know, platforms or whatever, and you see the people that are just out in the world. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? And it's like, well, I don't want to just watch life go by trying to, you know, sometimes, you know, something I always got to remind myself that I've said before, but I just got to remind myself that sometimes you could be so afraid to die that you scared to live.
Right.
You know? Like, dog, this is a finite situation. Something going, you gotta, you know, I remember a long time ago, a doctor told me, he's like, well, you gotta die from something. I didn't really want to hear that from the doctor, but it was the truth. You're right. Gonna die from something. So, like, what we doing? You gonna stay on pause? You know, because there's people out here moving. We, you know, there's a thing of, there's obviously not a collective pause, you know, as ideal as we wanted it to be. That is not really the reality of the situation. And, you know, you could keep pointing at Atlanta or Florida or whatever, but look, it's everywhere. People are out right. in the world. You know, so how you feeling? Where you stand on this?
Well, again, I'm getting to what I need to get to, and I'm restructuring my business and what I'm getting into and where I'm hustling at and where I'm plotting my future. I'm basing it on what's real. You know what I'm saying? A lot of times you could base a lot of things on what you think is ideal and what the perfect scenario should be. You know, but when you really got to move, it's what's happening right now. And what's happening right now is that it's limited mobility out here because it is COVID. You know what I'm saying? You can't do all what you used to do. Companies aren't executing a lot of things that you used to get paid to do. So, okay, how can you get paid within what you got power over? You know what I'm saying? Within your comfortability of moving around without exposing too much of yourself or the people around you. So mm-hmm. I'm just rethinking my whole shit as I have been this whole pandemic. But now it's really like, okay, what's the best way to move right here next 2 years, 3 years?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So that's how I'm looking at it. I'm looking at what's real right now. Yeah. And that's all I could do, because I'm not gonna sit down and just fucking ball up in the fetal position and quit, because that shit ain't there for me how it used to be.
Right.
You know? And that's again, I've been through this. You know what I'm saying? In a personal way, not in a global pandemic way, but
I was about to say. All right.
Nah. But like during the recession,
right?
Shit, I was basically like a nigga that was really affected. You know what I'm saying? I'm a nigga who had invested a whole lot into a business that was fucking dying. You know what I'm saying? And it was like COVID for business. You know what I mean? And my business had that shit. You know what I'm saying?
Yo, that's hilarious. That's hilarious because that makes me ask the question. Is broke a communicable disease? is that like
it ain't necessarily broke, but not being able to make is very much communicable. Ask all the newspapers and media companies that went out of business around 2008, 2009, 2007. Right. You know what I'm saying? Ask all the companies that took hits, and the people who were in the real estate market that really took hits in the real estate crash. You know what I'm saying? All remember all the mortgage brokers and all them motherfuckers used to be around 2006. Them niggas was extinct by 2008. You know what I'm saying? A lot of them, because they were doing them subprime mortgages and that shit crashed. You know?
Right.
So I was affected in my business and I was affected in my mortgage. You know what I'm saying? So I had to sit on the sideline and figure that shit out and rebuild, restructure. So with this, it's not as hard and complicated to pivot, because you like, oh no, I'm not finna lay down. Cause the one thing I did learn within the recession is that it's not the recession that takes you out. It's the fear. Once you get punched in the mouth, or once you lose, you like, oh Lord, it's over. Oh, they coming for me. You know what I'm saying? You looking out the window like Malcolm X, like they about to kick your dough in. But the reality is, that ain't how it works. You know what I'm saying? The reality is that, yeah, you got a situation and you got a mountain of bills and all that shit, but stopping ain't going to help you. You know what I'm saying? Right. Crying about it ain't going to help you. Balling up, taking a nap ain't going to help you. You got to get up and put one foot in front of the other and try to fix one problem at a time. Like, okay, I fixed that. Okay, I fixed that. And then as you're doing that, there's going to be new ones that's coming. It's like an avalanche of shit. Just, oh, shit, oh, shit. But having gone through that, this shit right here ain't shit, because it's like, okay, I know none of these problems ain't going to kill me. That's one. The COVID might, but none of these financial shits ain't going to kill me at all. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So that's that. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not afraid of that. I'm going to move. I move forward. And it never came to none of that, but that's just my attitude towards it. The whole world slowed down. I'm like, oh, I done seen this before. All right. Let me think about how I need to approach life. And what I didn't do in the recession, I didn't go internally and think, hey, man, how do you really want to handle this? You know what I'm saying? I was always thinking like, oh, shit, how they want me to handle this. What the papers say, what the mail say, and what the threats on the phone say. You can get kicked out of your shit. And you be like, oh, Lord, they're going to come kick me out of my shit. But that ain't how the shit work. You know what I'm saying? So you got time to fix shit before they could do that. You know what I'm saying? You got moves you can make to stop them from doing that shit. And so once you start figuring it out, you're like, okay, ain't nothing they could do to me now. Like this shit, okay, it slowed down. I just figure out another way to make some money. I figure out a whole nother thing to do. I figure out how to move and within the situation at hand, because that's what you had to do then. And the recession, you just had to, at a certain point after you get off the flow and stand up and be like, okay, goddamn, they ain't come yesterday. So let me go ahead and try to figure something out. Then you start figuring it out. And I, you know what I'm saying, it's almost like preparation for something like this, because you've been through something and this is a new something, but it's definitely not as bad, because for me personally, because one, everybody going through it at the same time. You know what I'm saying? It's not like it's just you, because that's what it feel like when you're going through a personal thing. You feel like it's just you. But when the world going through it, you say, okay, then you see people doing the shit you did when you first got punched in the nose. Like, oh shit, niggas is panicking. Like, damn, they shouldn't panic. And then you're able to help people. Like, nah, don't worry. You know what I'm saying? You know, we're do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. You know? And then, so you could remain in a certain state of calm because you've seen all of this before. And you've been through it. You've seen almost what could have been the worst of it. And at the worst of it, they can't kill you. You know what I'm saying? Even if you fall all the way the fuck out and they put you out your shit, you ain't dead. You still got a brain, two hands, or two feet to make some moves. So that never happened to me. It never came to that, but that's what you feared would happen. And so you realize once you put them 2 feet, one, two, boom, boom, use your mind, and stay out there in the streets and start figuring out what's what. You could come up. I started a whole new shit, but based off of my knowledge of what I knew, and it saved me. Like I said, sometimes your business is saved. My house saved me. You know what I'm saying? Just having that investment saved my life. You know what I'm saying? Because when you got that, you got moves you can make. It ain't like renting and you ain't pay your rent and they just kick you out. It's like when you got equity and shit like that, you could make certain moves that saves your fucking life. And you always got moves you can make. So that's what I learned from going through it. It's always a move you can make. Well, I was going through the shit and the lawyer, you know what I'm saying? I called my lawyer. There was some moves being made that I felt like, shit, this might be it. And I called the lawyer, and nobody answered. And they was like, if it's an emergency, call this number. Like, all right, boom, I called the emergency number because shit. So the nigga ain't answer. I'm like, God damn, how you not going to answer the emergency number?
Right. What's going on?
So I left a message. The nigga called me back about 2 hours later. I'm like, God damn, nigga, you ain't in no rush, is you? So the nigga phone rang. I answered the shit. And then I was like, hello? He was like, is your house on fire? I was like, no. He was like, is the marshal at the door? I was like, no. He was like, this is not an emergency. I'm like, damn. And then he was like, until those two things happen, there's always a move you can make. And I was like, word? Word.
Right.
That gave me a sense of calm to know that, okay, I ain't got to be stressing myself out every single day about every single letter that came to me. You know what I'm saying? And from there, I just built on that. And then I was, you know what I'm saying? Then you get up out the situation and you're like, oh, Lord. You know what I'm saying? Shit, I ain't worried about no COVID and no shutdown. I'm going to figure this shit out.
That's real shit. That is for real. That's a sermon right there. No, it's for real. And it's not, it's evergreen too. Like sometimes you got to remind yourself. Sometimes, you know, in that stillness, you know, in the midst of, you know, worry or fear or hysteria, if it goes that far, you got to remind yourself, especially if you've been through some things before that you thought were the fire. You thought was the emergency and you got through it. It's funny that you could get through it and it could be a while until you get into another situation that resembles what you've been through, that you could forget that you've been through something similar or even greater, you know? And it might take a minute for it to click. You know what I'm saying? Because it's presented in a way where this is new, this is different, or whatever, whatever. But, you know, to your point, if you're not dead, you're still living.
Right.
You know, so stop walking around looking dead because it's uncomfortable.
Because if you're still living and you got a motherfucking brain between your two shoulders, you could come up with something. You know what I'm saying? You can come up with something. You know what I mean? I know people, you know, they, you know, it's a lot of people that do a lot of things. But if you look at somebody like scammers or something like that, right? And, you know, they be just doing all kind of shit, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's crime. But the thought process of being able to make something out of nothing is something that you can, you know what I'm saying, you could add to your your thing. Don't go do no crime, of course.
Right.
But
right.
If you think like a con person or somebody like, they always got another angle on your ass. You know what I'm saying? And
right.
And in business and in real life and legal shit and whatever you do in your life, there's always another move you could make every turn.
Yeah.
And if you keep moving, you're going to hit that corner that opened the shit wide open for you. Like, oh, shit. If I had not came around this corner, I wouldn't have never knew that this shit could open up like this. And it'd be that one thing that put you back in the game ahead, way ahead of than what you ever been. And what I learned also is that by moving, even when it was not bleak, it was bleak. It wasn't, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't promising. When I look back, I still made some of the best connections I ever made during the worst of times, because you just moving. You ain't thinking about shit. You just like, okay, I got to motherfucking survive. But you're using all the tools that you got. And once people understand that, oh, he's resourceful, and motherfucker, you got tools that I never thought, like, because, you know, when you fuck with corporate brands and rich people and shit like that, they don't have to think like that. You know what I'm saying? So your perspective becomes important, because, like, damn, I wouldn't have never thought about it like that. Yeah, because you ain't in no situation. You know? So then it becomes an asset. It becomes part of your, it becomes part of your building. And it's like, damn. And then you just take it from there.
That's real. That is for real. Yeah, you just got to remember it. Remember it. You know, sometimes you could forget. Sometimes you could just, you know. And, you know, honestly, what I also found out, too, is, and I keep going back to, you know, COVID is just the context. Because what I mean by that, though, is this is just one layer, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the way you move is more ingrained than just what the context is.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's behavior that you may have to change, or may have to address, or may have to, you know, recognize. Mm-hmm. You know, it's easy to be like, nah, but it's COVID. You know what I'm saying? And then it's really fear. It's not COVID. COVID is what it's being described as at this moment, but it's truly fear. You know what I mean? And it's like, sometimes you got to remind yourself, like, keep going. You know, somebody sent me a meme a while ago, but it was just like, it was a story about this young girl driving with her father. And I guess she's like a new driver. And they driving, and it's like a crazy storm. It's like a downpour. It's crazy, you know, rain is coming, flooding, everything. And they driving, and she's getting nervous because she's a new driver, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's cars, you know, pulled to the side, parked to the side, kind of, you know, maybe waiting to storm out or whatever. And she's like looking at her father. Her father's like, just keep driving, keep going, just keep driving. Mm-hmm. And she's like, you know, you sure? Yeah, just keep going. Just keep driving, keep, you know. And eventually they get to the other side of the storm, you know? And if you look back, it's all them cars that are still stuck there waiting for the storm to pass. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes, you know, it's like it's moving. It's movement. It's, you know, not to make it extreme, but it's you know, like you said, don't fold up. Right. And obviously sometimes it's easier said than done, but any move is better than no movement. You know what I'm saying? Just like, you know, just a few push-ups is better than no push-ups.
Right.
You know? So, man, do what you can. And the more you do, the more you realize, well, like what they say, the more you do, the more you can do. Right. You know what I'm saying? Because it just starts to become kinetic and all of that. And, you know, honestly, for real, dog, like, you know, I needed to hear all that. I'm not gonna lie. I'm talking to me right now.
Right.
But, yeah, dog. So, yeah. I mean, shit. They made a fool. Zendaya John David Washington and Sam Levinson made a full movie in the midst of the COVID.
Right.
And, look at that.
Did you see that shit?
We talked about it a couple weeks ago. I told you I saw it. I thought it was dope. But now that you saw it, talk to me. What you feel?
Well, okay. I watched the shit. And it was tough on some levels to watch, but I enjoyed it. You know what I'm saying? I enjoyed what they did, you know what I mean? And after it's over, after you really sit with yourself and think about the shit, right? It becomes like, damn, that might have been the perfect argument. You know what I'm saying? Now, it was a lot of toxic shit in it. You know what I'm saying? A lot of dart throwing, a lot of, you know what I'm saying, trying to win, which would never play in real life. But this is not real life. So if you were to be able to have an argument where you could say the shit that is actually in your head and not, you know what I'm saying, and not just the things that won't, you know what I mean, piss somebody off or offend or shit like that, then, and each person will wait their turn to talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what made it Hollywood, where, you know, the argument.
Round one. Yeah, round two. Yeah.
Get to say they whole shit, and you just listen, take it, you know what I'm saying? Eat all the hard shit that come with it. Then you get to take your time, figure out where you want to come back at, and then come back at it. See, that's the Hollywood of it, and that would have never, that shit would have been over. That movie would have been over in the first 4 minutes. You know what I'm saying? As soon as the nigga would have said, you know what I'm saying, you crazy, you psycho, that shit would have went off the rails. You wouldn't have never been able to make another point in that fucking argument again. You know what I'm saying? Right. So, you know, in real life, a nigga would have been like, man, you know what? I'm about to go to bed on your ass. Fuck all this. You know what I'm saying? Then you still be living with a lot of the shit. Like, a real relationship wouldn't have made it through that argument. But if life was such that you could say all of the shit and still, you know what I'm saying, cuddle up with each other at the end of the night, then that would be it. But, yeah, that shit was wild, man. You know what I'm saying? As far as using the creativity of the limitations that you have as a shooter and a filmmaker in COVID to create this storyline and as much talking. You know, black people don't usually get movies where it's a lot of talking. We talked about that. Like mumblecore and shit like that. We don't really get to do those that often. So, you know, the only thing that kind of threw me about the film is that probably because I knew the writer was not black. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And the tone and the things that they were saying, you know, they didn't, you know, some of it didn't really resonate because it'd be like, man, nigga wouldn't have never said no shit like that. You know what I'm saying? Because you already know. But that's just when you're trying to put real life on a fictional scenario. I see a lot of conversation about the way dude was eating the mac and cheese. You know what I'm saying? But I understood why he was eating the mac and cheese that way. The nigga was hyped.
I was eating it. I was upset eating it fast. Nah,
he was drunk. Nigga, you know what I'm saying? First of all, you go to a premiere. Ain't no food at a premiere. You might get some popcorn.
Or drink. And you probably don't want to eat. Don't want to eat right then.
Yeah. Right, but even if you did want to eat, ain't really a whole lot of eating in most premieres. You know what I mean? It's always, you might eat afterwards at an after party or something, but obviously they ain't got no after party. You know what I'm saying? So, came home, hungry than a motherfucker, but he already, you know what I'm saying, had some drinks. You know what I'm saying? And he was already feeling nice when he walked through the door. So, you know, she mad, chefed up some mac and cheese. He was just slamming that shit. He wasn't thinking about, you know what I'm saying, trying to eat that shit politely. He was just slamming it, which I understood that part. But, you know, some people was like, why did he stir the mac and cheese before he started eating it? If you know black people, we always stir whatever in a bowl. You know what I'm saying? You put some motherfucking cereal in the bowl, you got to dunk it a little bit to make sure all the cereal wet. You know what I'm saying? If it's a soup, you got to stir that shit up to make sure you're getting all of what's in the soup in every spoon. You know what I'm saying? So you know, I was like, they nitpicking over that type shit. And then they was like, he was stabbing the mac and cheese to get it on the fork. But that's how you do when you drunk. You just do anything. You ain't sensible about how you doing that shit.
Yeah, that is a lot of scrutiny, but you know, that's part of criticism. I'm not even, you know, look, that's all of the discussion. I tell you this. One, I would also argue that you stirring that macaroni and cheese, because that's box macaroni and cheese. That's not even real macaroni and cheese. That's Kraft, up until probably college, Kraft was up there. It was one of my favorites. You know what I mean? Might even been better than, you know, at home macaroni and cheese, like real macaroni and cheese. Because I was a kid. Because in retrospect, I've tried it. You know, especially at the top of the pandemic, I remember, you know, doing the we might never be a civilization again horde, and I was like, let me get a couple boxes of Kraft macaroni and cheese just so I could revisit my youth. I did a lot of that, and I had one box of that, and I was cool on it. It is not the move, baby. You definitely got to be drunk and starving to totally appreciate that. But speaking to because I definitely see some criticism about it, and I've been wanting to talk about it. You know, it's a lot of things. It was stressful. You know what I'm saying? It's stressful just to see that joint. It could trigger. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you see it, and you're like, oof, ah. But shit, to your point, it was very okay. You go, you know, check ball. Here you go. It was make it, take it. You know what I mean? If it was an argument, it was very, all right, that's your shot. I bet. Watch this. It was a lot of that. So that is, to your point, that is the movie making magic of it all. But it was funny because I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot. I liked how it was shot. I liked the parameters in which it was shot. Again, it was shot in COVID. You know what I mean? So it was one location, and they had to do what they could do. You know, I said last week, I think, or maybe the week before, I'm a fan of those mumblecore films when they're compelling, when they're well written. You know, I just got a thing for bars anyway. From doing comedy to loving hip hop, you know what I mean? I just got a thing for like the spoken word, and not even like that, I'm not really the biggest fan. I could appreciate it when it's good, but it could get bad terribly. But I like when somebody has something to say and it's said well, you know, like I like that when it's compelling, and to, you know, Black people don't always see that in their films, you know what I mean? So for this to happen, it's cool. The criticism, and it's all good. It should be a lot of criticism. I was in Clubhouse, the night it had come out, and I seen some half-assed criticism that pissed me off. I had to leave the room. And the reason I say it was half-assed criticism was because this woman was talking shit about the movie, but and as she's talking shit, she said, well, you know, I only seen the first hour. I still ain't finished it, but this is what I think about the movie. And I'm like, you ain't even watched the whole fucking movie, and you going in on it, and you making these pronouncements, you know what I'm saying, as though you got to the end.
Right.
So I was like, man, let me go ahead and get out. Because everybody else that was indulging, none of them had seen the movie.
Right.
So I'm like, yo, what kind of criticism is that? That's one. But then I seen, you know, I seen a lot of talk on the timeline, and I want to credit her because she made a good point. Kind of in your way of, you know, Black people ain't gonna argue like that. What's her name? Dag, I forget. My home girl. She's Hello Mocha on Twitter, but she was talking about, amongst other people I've seen it, but you know, like, I think the tweet that she had, she was like, you know, people say black people ain't a monolith, but they be monolithing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I felt that because there's probably some black people that argue like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and the other thing is, you know, I've been seeing a lot, and outside of what she tweeted, but you know, I've seen a lot of people saying, you know, I've seen a lot of the conversation was the white gaze. You know what I mean? Because Sam Levinson is a white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it kind of discounts the fact that in the process, you know, one, and I said this before, we talked about it, Zendaya put up $1 million to produce the film, right? And I don't know if JDW threw some money in there, but I know he was also an EP on the film.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and I said before, Sam and Zendaya kind of, you know, they got a nice little Primo and Guru, Snoop and Dre type of chemistry. They building it, you know, right, between Euphoria and now this. Mm-hmm. So the process was, I don't know, she called him and was like, yo, let's do something. And they started doing the thing. But as he wrote it, he would call her and read, yo, this is what I'm writing, which, you know what I mean? And it was very collaborative. This is what it is. He would leave her on, like, cliffhangers. Mm-hmm. And she would, you know, kind of listen and feel the tone or whatever. And I'm sure in that dialogue, it was like, nah, I wouldn't say that. Or, you know, I wouldn't go like that. Or this is what I would like. You know what I mean? So it was way more collaborative than people give it credit for, because they see a white guy wrote it. So they figure this is a white guy's take on black people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was in Esquire talking about it. He was like, you know, it was way more collaborative. And it was like, I would never take that. You know, this is what he said in the article. But he was like, I would never take that liberty to just assume that this is how black people are. You know what I mean? This is how a black couple would argue. You know, I'm not black, so I gotta, you know, I'm these are my collaborators, so I'm making sure that all of this is vetted in real time as we're moving forward. You know what I'm saying? And to that point, everybody argue differently, black, white, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, so you, like, you don't even, like, you, we've all been, well, we're not maybe in a war, but you, you might have been in a situation where you might have been out with friends that are in a relationship and they might get snippy. Mm-hmm. You can kind of see that they low-key going at each other a little bit. But, you know, it don't all the way blow up into an argument. Sometimes you might blow all the way up into an argument in front of you. You're like, damn, that was wild, or that was different. You know what I mean? But it was just interesting. It was just it was something else to consider. You know what I'm saying? How it was done. Now, obviously, back to the whole, like, the, you know, the balanced soliloquies of it all. Like, that was a little romantic. Right. But, you know, black people are not a monolith.
No, I'm not saying that all black people argue the same. And I'm not saying that all people argue the same. It's like watching dragons fly in Game of Thrones. You know what I'm saying? It's, okay, this, you know, I'm going to say my shit, you're going to say your shit, I'm going to say my shit. And, you know what I mean?
Right.
That part of it, again, yes, you have to respect that it's the art of it all. But, and even if it was collaborative and they worked all together and came up with the shit together, it's still, as a viewer, you know what I'm saying, that information, knowing that, you know what I mean, it's like having of DJ Vlad in the background of the interview. You know what I'm saying? You're watching. Mm-hmm. You only see Boosie. But then when you hear him coming, you're like, oh, shit. You know what I'm saying? It's outside in the room.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's just how I feel. And that's, and it's not, that doesn't mean it's true. That doesn't mean that, you know what I mean, he was heavy-handed. It's just that white gaze is always just present as you're watching it. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And it, I can't say it took away or added to. I'm just saying that it's there. And it affects the viewing experience for me. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So that's all. It's like in science. In science, right? In like quantum physics and shit, right? They say that.
Don't say it like that.
So I'm just breaking it all the way down to like the most the smallest units of life.
Okay, go ahead.
They say that an atom could be in two places at one time, unless you're observing it. You know what I'm saying? So like when it's outside observing it, it don't happen. You know what I'm saying? But through the mathematics and the science, they could prove that it was in two places at one time. So it's like, even though you it may have been a collaborative process, once you know that there's that observation, it kind of, in my mind, it's like it's always there. It's like every line is being considered because that's there.
Right. But let me ask you this. Do you think that it's because you are aware of that? Like, you know, obviously.
Most definitely.
Because I think that has something to do with it. Because also, I do feel like outside of maybe Atlanta, maybe Insecure, but not even Insecure. And I'm saying maybe Atlanta or Tyler Perry. I don't know many productions, and I can't really say that this is right. There's always some white people in the room oftentimes, and they might not be credited, but they're going to give notes, and they're going to say, hey, how about that, or whatever, and it's based on the performance,
right?
If you believed it, or if you didn't, it's like seasoning.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, damn, that was a little too much cumin in that chili. I ain't enjoy it. You know what I'm saying? But go ahead.
And see, for me, you know what I'm saying? It's not that it's not always there. It's always there. You know what I'm saying? Like, what I'm saying is a small critique, you know what I'm saying, of a whole thing. Like, they made something that was masterful. You know what I'm saying? This is just like, if I had to say something, that's what I'm saying. But that was because it's only two people, it's only one house. You know what I'm saying? It was like, who else is in this motherfucking house? And it was old Levenstein. You know what I'm saying? he ain't here too. And I'm only saying that because I work in this thing, you know what I'm saying? And that gaze is there. You know what I'm saying? It's omnipresent. Right. And a lot of times the product that you get is affected by a gaze that it was like, damn, that shit was dope until, you know what I'm saying? And when it came with them notes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's fuck it. Let's just, you know what I'm saying? So again, it's not a major indictment of the film. I love the film. The film was great. It was uncomfortable. It did what the fuck it was supposed to do. We're on the conversation podcast with me and you. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And if I'm saying, you know, part of what I thought about watching it was that, you know, okay, how much of this is weighted? And, you know, it's just bullshit. It's a little shit that don't even really matter. But I just felt like I would say it because that was something in my mind.
Nah, it matters. This is in the conversation. That's what they listen for. And just to be clear, I'm not invalidating your criticism. I'm just asking you a question following up on it. Look, you watched the entire movie. So with that said, I'm with it. Because you watched the entire movie. You ain't watched it to the middle. It was like, yo, this is how I felt about it, whatever. Even though that's valid too, but I'm going to still look at it sideways because you ain't even get to the end of it. But if you watch it, how you feel is valid. You know what I mean? It's all subjective. It's all to be chewed on and everything like that. I enjoyed it. There's definitely things that, you know, I haven't watched it again. You know what I mean? And, you know, if I replay it, I might pick it apart a little bit more. But, I thought it from the first watch, I enjoyed it. I thought it was dope. Again, I think also it had a lot to do with the fact of I was a fan of Euphoria, so I like to see that, that was the first time I think I've said this before, I never really knew much about Zendaya other than the fact that I think she was a Disney actress, which I didn't see none of that stuff, so, like, I didn't know much about her as an actor until I saw Euphoria. And I was like, yo, she gets busy. And then I seen her in this. I might have seen her in Spider-Man, which is kind of like a popcorn movie. So it's not a whole lot that you could do that's going to make me like, oh, wow, that's acting. You know what I mean? Whereas I liked her performance in this. I like John David Washington. You know, I think he's still, I don't think he's had the role to where, like, he's had some great looks. Mm-hmm. Like, he was cool in Tenet, but I didn't like Tenet like that. It was confusing as hell, but I respected the fact that it was confusing and that they stood in that confusing shit. I don't know if I'd ever watch it again. Mm-hmm. Black Klansman, it was cool, but it wasn't, you know what I mean? I had a couple problems with it, but they weren't really based on him. Mm-hmm. But I don't think, I haven't seen nothing yet to say that, to where he, like, all the way put his foot in it. I think he's an able actor. I think he's a dope actor, but I don't think he's had the material in my mind to where he could kind of all the way put it out there. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if he's got a collaborator similar to with Zendaya and Levinson or whatever. So I felt that. But I also say this, just moving off of the energy of that, I'm definitely looking forward, and I've said this is the second week in a row, I'm definitely looking forward to Judas and the Black Messiah.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to the Lucas brothers. I'm excited about that. I seen that they just put out the track list, because now they, you know, the marketing has been crazy, you know what I mean? But now they just threw the track list for the soundtrack, an inspired soundtrack is what they're calling it. And there's a record on there with Hov and Nipsey Hussle, which I'm excited to hear, amongst other records. So, you know, I've been hearing that's crazy too. But it's shit, man. It's been a hell of a season for black stories.
Yeah, I mean, you know? I think we are catching up. I think the studios are recognizing the strength, you know what I mean, of the black consumer. One thing I would say about the joint and Zendaya specifically is that, you know, when you choose to do a project on your own outside of the shows that you're hired to do, then you put up $1 million of your own money to do it. I really fuck with the fact that she kept it in line with the shit that she's already doing. You know what I'm saying? Right. From like Euphoria. Instead, you know, a lot of people like to go off like, I don't want to be typecast, da 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 da. But she doubled down on a character that she's already known for, which can only help strengthen her brand, because you already could accept that's what it is. And you know what I mean? So it's like you're not trying to recreate the wheel. You're building on your brand equity. And so and then when it wins, then, you know, you could do other shit. You know what I mean? So I fucked with that. And then on John David's performance, you know, I really fuck with it. I see his, like, I fuck with how his voice, like, you know, brings his dad in at some point. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But then I was like, I'm glad he looks like his mother, so we wouldn't have to be forced on it every time you compare him to Denzel every time you see him. So so I think it works well. I think he went, you know, shit, the nigga was out of breath half the movie. You know what I'm saying?
He killed it. And for the record, just to go back on what I said, I do think this is, in my mind that I've seen from him, I think this is his best performance.
Mm-hmm.
He bodied shit. When he did that whole crazy rant and all of that, like, yeah, he bodied it all. When he's out fencing, like fake fencing, and like he was wild. He's taking it there. So yeah, I think they both rocked out. Like it was crazy. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
So as far as the performance and what they did, I think they created something special. Just even for the mass of people to watch that shit in black and white, nigga. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of people get, black and white. Yeah.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? For them to do something that's so compelling that people don't complain that it's in black and white, that was dope. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
To put those characters, even though they weren't like rich characters or whatever, I like how they played why they were in the house that they were in. Mm-hmm. I love how they mm-hmm. did that. You know what I'm saying? Because right. you usually don't see black characters in that type of architecture and design. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Right. And the way that they shot it played to the whole architecture of the house. And then the way they didn't come right out and say why they were in that house. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So you thinking, okay, damn, this how they living? Damn, how you doing that on a little new director budget?
Right, right.
And then you find out, you know what I mean? So I like how they rolled that out, and, you know.
Yeah.
So they did their motherfucking thing, man.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was good, man. Anyway. You got anything else you want to chop it up about, or what you feeling?
Man, I'm good, man. Shit.
All right, well, there you go. There you go. I feel good about this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very transparent on this one.
Yeah. I think so. I think so. You know, oh man, I hope Gorilla Glue Girl, I hope it all works out for her. Though. I do want to say that.
It
man.
Will.
I think,
you know what I'm saying? She might be fucked up in her hair process for a minute, but yeah. I think her sharing her story and being transparent with her story puts her in a way better position, you know what I'm saying? You know, her GoFundMe has, somebody started a GoFundMe for her. That shit is performing well.
Right.
You know, the audience on Twitter is taking Gorilla Glue to task, you know, trying to hold them accountable. Mm-hmm. So she got a lot of warriors on her side fighting for her cause, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And they doing the surgery or the process, the procedure for free. There's a doctor that's going to.
Oh, they got. I didn't see that.
Yeah. So supposedly it was a cost $12,000. It's like a 3-day process to help her. And the doctor's doing it, you know, on the arm. You know, obviously it's going to be a nice little piece of publicity. But I definitely appreciated the fact that. You know, like the response was a lot more tolerant and respectful than, you know, because it could have easily went in the, come on, you know, you know what I mean? Like it could have been relegated to the, you an idiot type of bag. You know what I'm saying? And it was a little bit more, I think the transparency of her video and the vulnerability putting it out there, like it made people say, yo, nah, that you felt it. You know what I'm saying? Like you really felt it. So yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy that I hope it all works out and I think it is gonna work out. So yeah, that's what's up. I'm not even gonna shout the cat out. I don't even want to talk about it. There's a cat out there pandering in the pandemic, some clown ass dude trying to cancel Black History Month. He's black, but we ain't gonna get that man no real. Yeah, man, I don't even want to get no more breath.
Have a point somewhere, but you know, I ain't going to look for it per se. I ain't see it, so shit.
Yeah, I ain't feel the point. I ain't see the points. But that's it, man. You got any last words you want to drop, or
man, stay strong out here. You know what I'm saying? If you're going through it, just know that. You know, you got to keep moving, never give up, keep one foot in front of the other. I was in the fourth grade, we had a reading book. It was called Never Give Up, right? And, you know, in the fourth grade, you know, you're not taking too much into the title of your book, you know what I'm saying? But for some reason, that particular title stuck with me, Never Give Up. It was a brown book, you know what I'm saying? It was all reading comprehension and shit. And so, you know, as I got grown, I realized why it stuck with me. You know what I mean? Because you get in situations where you just be like, man, shit, I could quit. But nah, keep moving. Keep it moving. Keep thinking. Keep praying or whatever you do to get your mentals together or your faith together. And shit, you will come through the shit. You know what I'm saying? Or you will die. And
there you go.
And we all gonna do that, so you might as well keep going until you do.
Yeah, and while you're alive, wear a mask. And, you know, until then, tell a friend to tell a friend.
And even an enemy.
To get in the conversation. We out.